You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Listen carefully now. Are these guys talking about helping the poor or protecting the rich?
What our nation needs is a real agenda that helps people acquire the skills they need to lift themselves out of poverty and to pursue the American dream.
Everybody cares that we get people out of poverty. But unfortunately, a lot of these strategies have failed miserably to the point where we had the highest poverty rates in a generation.
When two Republican voices with White House ambitions, Senator Marco Rubio and Congressman Paul Ryan, make anti-poverty programs the focus of their economic policies, are we seeing the cavalry in the war on poverty declared 50 years ago today by Democratic President Lyndon Johnson?
This administration today, here and now, declares unconditional war on poverty in America. And I urge this Congress and all Americans to join with me in that effort.
You've heard that soundbite a lot this week. We thought we would look past the war on poverty today and inquire about what the current Democratic president has called the defining issue of our times, income inequality. What would it take to declare war on the record income inequality in the United States? Probably something more than the training programs called for by Senator Rubio. Would it call for a radical critique of free market capitalism, though, that Pope Francis has actually called for publicly? We spoke with Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University and special advisor to the United Nations Secretary General and a consultant to Pope Francis.
We have to address the things that have gone seriously wrong over the last 30 years. At the top of the income distribution, there have been really reckless policies of tax benefits for the super rich. And of course, at the bottom has fallen through. Real incomes at the bottom end of the U.S. income distribution have suffered grievously with high unemployment, with a changing labor market, with the people who lack the skills and lack the social support to be able to find their way in a changing economy. And all of those require a fresh look after basically 30 years of neglect.
Thinking about Lyndon Johnson and the 50-year anniversary of the war on poverty, now Johnson probably understood he wasn't going to eliminate poverty with his war on poverty, but the notion of indifference to poor people in the United States, he did manage to address, and there were serious resources put towards helping people and creating a safety net. You've talked about the globalization of indifference in dealing with income inequality and Pope Francis's critique of capitalism. How do you address that? You've laid out the case for global inequality, but how do you actually create a war, an offensive against this indifference in the way that Johnson did 50 years ago?
I think there are two things to note. First, there is a widespread concern, but it has been politics driven by the very top of the income distribution that has held back a lot of the steps that we need. Actually, the American people, looking across the whole spectrum, have supported higher taxes on the rich for a long time, but they don't get their way because their influence in the political process is absolutely tiny. I think the second thing that is crucial is to have a program that is specific ideas that people can believe in and can trust. Now, you look back at LBJ's war on poverty, it has gone down as, quote, a failure. But actually, that's not the case. What happened is that poverty fell very, very sharply during the 1960s from about 22% national poverty rate in 1959 to about 12% a decade later. But by then, two things had happened. One is that the Vietnam War started to eat up the budget that should have continued in that fight against poverty. And the second is the political pendulum swung towards the conservative viewpoint. So it wasn't that the policies were failing. Actually, they were achieving dramatic progress in reducing poverty of the elderly through Medicare, in addressing many other challenges. But the political support was lost, and as often happens, war grabbed the resources, the scarce resources of our budget, and the war on poverty became a piece of history rather than an ongoing proposition. So I would say that we need two things. We need politics responsive to people rather than just to the top, and that will require a new kind of politics.
Is it a new kind of politics that involves, you know, pitchforks and guns in the Occupy movement, or is there some incentivized way of making this happen? I don't see a gradualism here. What I do see is some sort of unsustainable breakpoint.
Well, I think the Occupy movement's very interesting. It was a new kind of politics, but certainly not a politics of pitchforks and guns. It was peaceful protests in public parks across the country. It attracted massive public support, so much so that these protesters were shoved out of the parks when it became inconvenient. But I think the Occupy movement actually was a fully peaceful way to bring to the public's attention some of the grim realities of our society. And when one turns to the substantive ways to proceed, there again, I believe that there are very big challenges, because the labor market definitely has shifted against lower skilled workers big time. This means that new skills, new training, adjusting to the information technology world really requires a change in the way we teach, train, prepare young people for the labor force. But other things are much simpler. We could collect taxes and close down these egregious tax havens in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, and having our IRS let our biggest companies evade what they ought to be paying for the benefit of the American people. Those steps, at least administratively, are rather straightforward, even though politically they're difficult because they mean battling powerful interests.
Well, to watch where a mass movement might emerge, the takeaway might be, do we wait for the pendulum to swing, or will that mass movement be led by someone on the order of Johnson? We'll just have to see. But Jeffrey Sachs, thanks so much.
Good to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Jeffrey Sachs is director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University and special advisor to the United Nations Secretary General.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, the brain training program designed by neuroscientists and used by 50 million people, created to improve memory and attention. More at Lumosity.com.